Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us from London, England, where I'm always curious, what is the weather like? And as we say good morning to you as we are recording this program today, Tom, and of course, good afternoon, since you're some 5 hours ahead of us. What's the weather like there in London?
Quite nice today. It's a bit cool. It's in the upper 60s, I'd say, or mid-60s, so a bit on the cool side, but reasonably sunny. It's supposed to warm up to the upper 70s, low 80s by the end of the week. Summer is still with us. Quite often this time of year, it starts to cool down in August.
How about rain?
We had some rain earlier in the week, but I don't think it's been too bad this summer.
That leads me to
say... My wife disagrees.
Oh, well, that's because she's been putting up with you. I mean, we won't go there today, but that added, I do appreciate that. Well, Tom, as we begin the program, I'm always interested in knowing as we begin, you know, start out the afternoon, what is the latest buzz related to the United States there in the United Kingdom and particularly in the European community? And I've got to start with, of course, the political scene. The president, what's the buzz there? We'll get, I'm sure, get around to other issues associated to the president, associated with economy. But this is the social political environment there. What's the buzz?
Oh, Greenland is the big subject. Greenland.
Right.
You know, that island which has been was misrepresented by the Vikings.
Because it's so snowy. But wait a second. At its point, it was probably pretty green.
At some point in the Jurassic period or something like that. Yes, it probably was.
Well, it's, of course, the topic is the effort on the part of the president to offer to buy Greenland. How is that being reported?
People are sort of, some of them are laughing. Some of them are totally appalled. Some of them are just saying, oh my goodness, what on earth is he talking about and thinking?
But wait a second. You're seeing that in the European press or the UK press or both?
It's definitely in the Danish press.
Okay.
I mean, Greenland is part of Danland.
Right.
Denmark.
Denmark, right.
In fact, the Danish prime minister has responded by offering to buy America.
Well, hey, listen, if the price is right, there are some of us.
Let me explain why. And it goes back to the Atlantic Charter in 1940 between the US and Britain and the UN Charter after that, in which basically everyone agreed that the days of colonies and buying and selling countries or conquering countries in that way and annexing them were over. And what was the most important thing was the self-determination of the people who live there. Because when you buy a country, you don't just buy the land, you buy the people who live on the land. And the idea is that they should decide whether they want to be Danish, American, Canadian, or Greenlanders. And they don't want to be American. They're quite happy being Danish. If that land, if Greenland is sold to America, they become Americans against their will. He wants to buy and sell people.
Well,
that's called slavery.
I think that's a bit of a stretch, but I'll tell you what would be fascinating.
It's not in the view of the Greenlanders or the Danes. So I'm giving you their view.
Well, it's...
And that is what they're calling it over here.
No different.
And they're really very cross.
Okay, well...
That he would suggest it.
No different
and
than...
And that they show that it indicates a really lack of understanding, a huge depth of lack of understanding.
Of course, and I just want to make mention of the fact that I'm not sure which president it was, has offered to buy Greenland once before.
Yes, Truman did.
Truman, that's what it was, Truman.
Truman offered to buy it in 1947.
Right.
And he was laughed at as well.
Okay, well, you know, the other aspect of why is Greenland part of Denmark? Why is it not just Greenland? As a matter of fact, it's a...
It's not sustainable on its own. It has a population of 50,000.
Well,
they had talked about independence, but it's so small. And it was the Vikings from Denmark and Norway, which at one time were all part of the same kingdom, which discovered Greenland and first settled it.
But wait a second. The first comment to you is it's a very large island. It's a very large area. As a matter of fact, it dwarfs another nation nearby, Iceland.
It's not as large as you think.
But it's larger
than Iceland. It's actually a massive lagoon. The landmass is just around the edge. Uh-huh. In the center is basically the Arctic Ocean. And that is frozen. But, of course, that frozen ice waste is retreating due to climate change.
Right.
That is opening up the possibility of exploiting the natural resources, which, again, is not something the Greenlanders want to do because they've generally got a fairly pristine environment, and they like to keep it that way. They're heavily involved in fishing and things like that.
The other question.
So they don't want the EPA getting involved in mining for minerals on their soil.
Yeah, no, it's not the EPA opening up mining. It's the EPA and its bureaucracy.
Allowing it to open up mining.
That we would greatly agree with as far as the Greenlanders are concerned. They would be a new star on our flag. I'm disappointed. All right. So you don't
think. Not everyone wants to be American.
Oh.
I know that's difficult to believe. Not everyone does.
I cannot imagine that. Well, we've got a lot of people who keep traveling across the border illegally to be an American, but that's another story. By the way, I assume you've been to Greenland?
I'm afraid I haven't. I'm sorry. I've been to Iceland.
Iceland is a giant rock, a volcanic rock for that. Let's talk about other news.
A lovely country, actually.
It is. Another item I want to touch on has to do with the news, of course, associated with Jeffrey Epstein, and what's the buzz there, and since his death now a week ago.
There's a lot of focus on Prince Andrew. The fact that Prince Andrew retained his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein after his first conviction. And that is rebounding very badly on the royal family, who are denying and claiming that they're appalled that Jeffrey Epstein was in any way involved with underage sex, and that Prince Andrew definitely wasn't. But it does not look good for Prince Andrew. It reflects very badly on him that he retained his friendship after Epstein's first conviction. The other thing which gets in the news is that Trump keeps talking about the fact that he believes that Epstein was murdered, when, of course, the inquest has declared that he was a suicide. That is the legal position, that he was a suicide. Normally, someone like the president or the prime minister of a country likes to uphold the law and the judgments of the courts, but that's not the case with the American president. He challenges them.
Even though
he is responsible as the president of the United States for the court system.
Well, I will say it's just that it's part of the democratic system, which, of course, eludes the understanding of so many in the world. I'm confident it does
I think what eludes the understanding of so many in the world is just how Donald Trump's mind works.
Well, that's good. We want to keep everybody guessing. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Tom, one other item we've not even discussed. I'm just curious if it's getting much coverage. And this has to do with the recent efforts on the part of the United States related to some missile launches and, of course, the dispute between Russia and the U.S. What kind of coverage is that getting right now, and particularly in the concerns?
There was a big story today about it, the fact that the United States, from a base in California, had just tested an intermediate-range missile in response to the Russians doing the same. It is getting big coverage. They are really worried that the INF treaty has been scrapped. They obviously don't want the Russians to unilaterally develop intermediate-range missiles, which could put Europe at threat from a Russian attack, but they don't want American missiles on European soils because they're concerned that those missiles would then become a target for Russian missiles. So what they really want is a return to the INF treaty, where neither side has any intermediate range missiles. Now, the American position is the Russians have blinked or jumped first. The only way to go back to the INF treaty is to once again build up the American INF arsenal,
mm-hmm, right,
so you have something to negotiate.
The fact is that we've known for quite some time that Russia has broken the treaty.
Years.
So the European community at this point thinks that the United States is just ratcheting up the issue. But can we trust Vladimir Putin and the Russians?
No.
Okay.
And Putin recently met with Macron, and Macron more or less, you know, told him, you know, you've got to stop this. And, you know, Putin said, oh, well, it's all the fault of the Americans.
Right.
They're the ones who withdrew from the treaty. Of course, the reason they withdrew from the treaty is because the Russians developed intermediate range missiles. It's definitely the Russians who have moved first on this.
And the European community sees that. That's fine. It gives me a sense that the Europeans are aware. All right, we're going to get back to more here in just a moment. We're going to talk about politics in the U.S. as well. Here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. As we were in the middle of the break, Tom wanted to correct me on a comment I made related to the European community and the issue of the INF treaty with Russia and the concerns associated with ramping up an arms race with Russia. Tom, I'm tough. I can handle it. You wanted to correct me on a description.
I think it wasn't the European community. It's not the European community who's talking about it. It's the European members of NATO. And there is a difference, but I think it's an important difference.
I'll accept that that nuance. I think it's important. I agree with you fully.
It's an important diplomatic nuance when you're having negotiations.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's talk about other issues, nuances, as a matter of fact. Let's start with, and by the way, I didn't even ask, Woodstock. Has been any coverage about the 50th anniversary of Woodstock, which, of course, is, I mean, a really seminal event, tongue firmly planted in cheek on that comment, a seminal event in American history.
Absolutely. And I wasn't even there. Were you?
Yes, I was. I'm confident I was.
You just can't remember.
I don't remember. That's right. And you were there. I saw you there.
Mention has been made. And there was a leader today in the Times about how the 60s were so important or not so important.
Uh-huh.
But it's not been a huge thing. It was mentioned in passing.
Okay. Let's talk then about other events in the States. And, of course, I've got to bring up associated with Woodstock, oddly. Well, that's a little bit of a stretch. Elizabeth Warren, and she's apologized to American Indians.
Yes, no, I saw that. But the press over here are thinking that she might be the one who wins the nomination.
Wow.
Because they see her sort of creeping up on Joe Biden.
Oh,
and
yes.
Joe Biden has been making a few errors in his speeches recently.
They're called gaffes.
Lot of people, according to the media here, are attributing it to his age and that they're noticing that he tends to get a bit tired towards the end of his speeches and things like that. And that Elizabeth Warren is sort of creeping up on him.
Of course, we have some 20 candidates in the Democrat fold. One, of course, who just recently stepped down. But the question I have is there a sort of a favorite within the United Kingdom and, again, I'll use that broader term, the European community? Is there a favorite at this point?
No.
Really?
I noticed also that Anthony Scaramucci was on television the other day suggesting that he didn't like Trump anymore. Well, saying he didn't like Trump. In fact, he thought that Trump had lost his marbles. Those were his words. And that the Republicans needed someone to challenge him.
The mooch, as he's called by his friends, got crosswise with the president on a few items as well. So right now, the odds on favor has been Joe Biden. But you say Elizabeth Warren is seen as climbing in the polls. But I'm curious about other candidates, Cory Booker and Kamala Harris, particularly. Any interest in those candidates or is it really?
Oh, yes. The Paul Buttigieg. I never can pronounce his name. Paul Buttigieg.
Buttigieg.
Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Joe Biden are considered the front runners.
What about Bernie Sanders? Is there much interest?
Yeah, I mentioned Bernie, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, but no, I'm just this fact that he is, under the rubric, a socialist, how is he being perceived there, his remarks?
Well, a lot of people think he's too much of a socialist for America.
Well, that's true.
They're very conscious of the fact that America is not as liberal as many European countries. And it's important. I think the key, what people want here is someone who can defeat Trump at the polls. And they don't think that Bernie can do that.
Wait a second. All right. So there's already a favorite in a sense that anyone other than Donald Trump is a favorite in the European community?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Really?
Now, the emphasis is on defeating Trump.
Wow. Okay, so it's not just a cadre of politicians in the United States. It is a worldwide. This is an important story.
It's picking the politician that can defeat Donald Trump.
But wait a second. We've discussed this and debated this over and over, Tom. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us, viewpoints around the world from London, England, as a matter of fact. Tom, you and I have disagreed on this on numerous occasions where you say the U.S. has no role in international politics and the decision related to leadership in these other countries. Now you're accepting this as appropriate for folks in Europe.
I'm not saying that they're interfering.
I'm saying
what the public want. And the public are affected by America's policies. Trump's tariffs are having a detrimental effect on European economies.
We'll talk about that in a few minutes because I'm going to bring up the issue of the economic impacts of the world change. But let's stick with the political scene in the United States. And I know you want to chat about President Trump and his recent presentation in New Hampshire.
Again, people are saying, what he's doing is undermining the democratic system in the United States by claiming that it's broken. What he's saying is that people that, in fact, I think his words were millions of people were bussed in and voted twice or voted when they shouldn't have voted to give a skewed result without any evidence, according to the Electoral Commission.
But wait a second.
He doesn't back this up with any evidence. He just makes the claims.
All right. But
at least that's how it's reported here.
Okay, that's interesting.
By doing so, he's saying the electoral system in America is unfair. He's saying that it's broken, and therefore, it's not really a democracy.
Let's look at several factors here. Number one, there's no question that the electoral system has some major flaws in it, as is indicated by the concerns associated with Russian collusion. And as a matter of fact, is there any coverage over the fact that there's concerns? And by the way, we've seen this.
I thought there wasn't any Russian collusion.
No. Collusion between the president and Russia. No, there was no Russian collusion. But Russia and involvement in the electoral system. The European community has even worried about that in other countries. The fact that you've seen Russian involvement in elections and other.
Any suggestion by Europeans or anyone else that the Russians broke into the voting system and voted twice, three times, or whatever.
Well, but wait a second.
The collusion is that they put out emojis and misinformation and things like that in order to persuade certain people to vote in a certain direction.
Okay, so you're not getting any.
That is completely different.
No.
From people voting two, three, four, five times.
As a matter of fact, there's proof they've voted two or three more times. We've seen this in situations here in this country. But there's another aspect of this which somewhat surprises me. Several items. One, just to make note of this, that it was the Democrat leadership that has concerned itself with the fact that there were efforts to hack the electoral system in the United States. We have several states, Ohio, Florida, among them, and possibly even North Carolina, interestingly enough, where there is indication that there was electronic mischief, I'll use that term, hacking in the actual election equipment.
Equipment connected to the Internet?
Yes. Yes.
Wow, it shouldn't be.
Okay, so that's information that's not aware of.
I can tell you that here in Europe, they do not connect the voting system to the Internet.
Okay, no, in fact, there is a grave concern in North Carolina that we still have computer systems for voting, about 22 counties in North Carolina, where there's touchscreen voting, and there's no paper document, and there's a
They have touchscreen voting in some European countries, but they're standalone systems, they're standalone computers, right. So they're not connected
to
the web.
These actually have connections, but also via various devices, thumb drives, and this of this nature, there's some concerns about further mischief.
You're telling me there's hard evidence that it was hacked.
Yes, there were attempts at hacking.
That's what the Electoral Commission denies. They say there's no hard evidence that they were hacked.
Which electoral, maybe in New Hampshire, maybe in New Hampshire, possibly.
And that's the one that Trump is focusing on.
Well, that's fine, but there are other instances, but they've been uncovering this. I find that interesting. It hasn't gotten a lot of coverage. We're going to take a quick break on that. We're going to come back. We've got to talk about issues there in Europe and around the world. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We've been chatting about instances and the views of the United States from him, from the European perspective. Now I want to hear about the world politic from the European perspective. Got to start with the issue of Brexit. What's the future of Brexit? It's an age-old conversation. We've been doing this now for 3 years, Tom. Same story every week.
Well, it's beginning to look increasingly like there'll be a no-deal Brexit, because neither the EU nor Boris Johnson's government will budge over the what's called the backstop between Northern Ireland and Ireland. And as we speak, Boris Johnson is in Germany, and he's then going from there to Paris to try and persuade Angela Merkel in Germany and Macron in Paris in France to support his proposal that the backstop be scrapped. And then he's going on to the G7 summit in Biarritz to talk to other people. Again, the emphasis is going to be on, you know, scrapping the backstop.
Now, I heard a story earlier today in which it was proposed that asking the European Union to just be patient and give Brexit an opportunity to work, and basically asking for trust from the European Union. Is that conceivable?
I've been reading that over and over and over again, that statement, and I really can't see much difference between the positions. I may be wrong. They may be able to find a ray of light in that.
Okay.
But basically, the opposite was being asked by the EU to say, they were saying previously, you got to trust us.
Uh-huh, right.
And so now it's the British saying, no, you have to
trust us. Yeah, okay.
Neither side really trusts the other.
Let's talk about economy. I want to bring up, since you mentioned Germany, and then we'll go to the G7, the economy in the United Kingdom. And by the way, I recently read a story that information was leaked to the press. I find this fascinating. It was leaked to the press. I have to say that if people had been listening to Viewpoints Around the World with a gentleman by the name of Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, who,
I'm
by
like
the way,
Sid.
who is with us today, you commented months ago about the potential threat associated with pharmaceuticals and the possibility of medical disruption. And there was a recent story that was leaked to the press that, goodness gracious.
Well, the difference is where it came from. You know, I said it, but I am not the cabinet office.
Oh, okay.
And that's where the leak came from.
Oh, you're not in the cabinet office. I thought you were.
No, I'm not in the cabinet. Oh. And this is a leak from the cabinet, or from the cabinet office, from the civil servants in the cabinet who were tasked with working out what the impact of a no-deal Brexit would be. So they wrote up this report, which said basically what I've been saying for months, that there wouldn't be enough food, there wouldn't be enough drugs, there wouldn't be enough, there'd be terrible transport problems and everything else, the economy would shrink and so forth and so on. It was leaked to the Sunday Times, which published it more or less in full. And the Boris Johnson government said basically it's not true. They started off saying it wasn't true, that it was what they call fear factor. And then they said, well, actually, it's just a worst-case scenario, which we have to plan for. But, you know, there are other scenarios which are more realistic.
Okay.
And so the various people have been saying, well, if there are other scenarios, what are they?
Okay,
and they won't say.
All right, the other aspect of this, Tom, to belabor the issue, people should have been listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, let's move to another item associated with the economy, and then we'll jump right into the G7 summit. Germany, looking at the possibility of recession Is this related to Brexit? Is it just a matter of the world politic?
Yes. The economists are saying that there are two factors that are basically drawing down the world economy. Both the British and German economies are in negative growth at the moment, are shrinking, both by about 0.25%, so, you know, a quarter of 1% in the last quarter. The two factors are Brexit and Trump's tariffs.
Okay, Trump's tariffs, but also the Chinese tariffs in reaction. What about the G7? What will happen at the G7, and will this be a topic?
Yes, of course it'll be a topic. There will be pressure on Trump to basically, you know, lift the tariffs as much as possible.
Who will be attending?
They don't want to. They don't want a reduction in interest rates. Interest rates are already very low. They don't want a reduction, and they see a reduction as being inflationary, while at the same time not solving the problem of the danger of a recession. So you could have the dual problem of a recession and inflation.
Who will be in attendance at the G7? Will the nation's leaders, Germany, France, Great Britain?
Yes, that's exactly. It is the heads of government.
And
in some cases, like France, Macron's head of government and head of state.
Is there a sense that China has been playing fair with the world economy? I mean, especially in
A lot of people accept China has not been playing fair with the world economy. What they do not accept is the reaction or how to go about resolving that problem.
But it hasn't been resolved in years.
And they think that Trump's rather punitive tariffs, mm-hmm. or what they regard as punitive tariffs, are an overreaction and possibly related to the beliefs of people like Bolton and Bannon, who believe that there's going to be at some point a conflict with China. And they've actually said this,
right?
And that the best thing to do now is prepare for it by weakening China economically.
Is there no concern? I mean, China is a bully. I mean, both in the economy world politics.
Okay, they, as you probably know, they lay claim to Taiwan. They also lay claim to Hong Kong, and it is China is or Hong Kong is part of China,
right?
But autonomous. Now, what's happening though is that they're very keen that Hong Kong becomes, the absorption of Hong Kong becomes a template for the absorption of Taiwan.
Okay.
Now, the Taiwanese are starting to offer asylum to any Hong Kong dissidents mm-hmm. who might be threatened by China. And China is beginning to get upset about this and protest. And so they're making very loud noises about consequences for Taiwan if they continue to give asylum to anyone in Hong Kong, any distance in Hong Kong that might be prosecuted.
What fascinates myself, particularly, and I would say many of the audience here, particularly in the United States, we're stunned by the rather passive approach that Europe takes when it comes to Chinese bullying on either the economy, the world politic, or, if you will, the military. Does China still have a fair amount of trust in the European community?
They try and separate the economic from the political and the military.
And we hear in the States say that's not possible. And quite frankly, I would argue it's a naive approach because it's the economy that allows China to build its military. All right, moving on. Another item, and we're going to connect these
Can I just add that it's the Chinese economy which acts as an engine for the world economy as well. By attacking the Chinese economy, you're attacking your own.
Well, possibly, but we're also...
Or damaging.
Well,
that's the problem. That's
little
the problem.
Pain...
Everything's connected, Lockwood.
No gain
it's
without
all
pain.
Connected.
No gain without pain. Let's move on. European climate change, Israel, and water. Let's
start with the... there's a meeting in the Nordic Council today, which Angela Merkel, and Germany's not a member of the European Council, or the Nordic Council, I'm sorry. Germany's not a member, but she's attending. The meeting's in Reykjavik, and a big part of the meeting is focused on climate change, and they've gone off to what used to be a glacier.
Right.
And they put down a plaque, mm-hmm. Basically a gravestone, because the glacier is no more. It's disappeared due to climate change. And so they put down an RIP glacier. You know, we're sorry you met, mm-hmm. you left, and it's all down to climate change. So climate change is a very big issue here. It's been a very big issue all summer as the as temperatures gone through the roof. At the moment, they've got wildfires on Gran Canaria Island.
Mm-hmm.
Something like 1,000 people have been evacuated. And they are seriously worried here about the impact of climate change.
All right. Then let's talk about Israel and water.
Well, now this is very interesting. This isn't climate change, but it certainly is caused by man-made activity.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fault which runs underneath the Sea of Galilee, a tectonic fault which runs underneath the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea.
Mm-hmm.
For years, about a third to a half of Israel's water came from the Dead Sea.
Right.
But dropping levels of sea level in the Sea of Galilee and increasing population meant that back in the 1990s, the government gave permission to tap some of the aquifers in the area. Now, these aquifers were keeping the tectonic plates stable.
Mm.
And so what is happening is by drawing the water out of the aquifers, the water now, it's opened up rifts in the tectonic plate. They're starting to have minor earthquakes. It could lead to bigger ones. But whenever they do have an earthquake, the water seeps away into the tectonic plate.
Ah.
And so they're losing their freshwater aquifers, and they're losing water from the Sea of Galilee. It's going to be a serious problem for Israel.
Well, as a matter of fact, I know that this is coming up in just a few moments. We're going to talk about desalinization, and maybe that's the solution. I'll just tease that here with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. And again, yes, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate not only his sleeping schedule, but also today an issue with another meeting for both he and Tom. He in London, I here in the States, but joins us every Wednesday here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us from London, England, and yes, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. A few moments ago, Tom, we brought up the issue of desalinization. I know that there's a little humor in what we're about to talk about, but there's also, and we're going to take a few moments to discuss probably the serious nature of this topic, has to do with Indian, and that is as in the former colony, British colony of India. India textbooks?
According to some of the Indian textbooks, Japan dropped the atomic bomb on America. And David Bowie and Freddie Mercury are responsible for the invention of desalinization plants.
I think that the Israelis would be interested in that, particularly with the desalinization, because as you just pointed out a few moments ago, they're having a problem with water resources there in Israel.
Well, unfortunately, Freddie Mercury and David Bowie have both passed on. So,
not only that,
they might have a problem.
Not only that, I don't think they had anything to do with the desalinization. India textbooks, what in the world gives here?
Well, in India, each of the local authorities is responsible for education, and they simply buy the cheapest textbooks available to save money.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the result.
We know
there is no sort of overall Indian educational system.
And no standardization.
Well, standardization and no standards.
And this is a grave concern for two reasons. One, India is the largest democracy in the world.
1 billion people.
In the world. It is a major economic engine in the world. And we have a lot of businesses here in the United States who have offshored many of their services and their operations to India. As I say, India, similar to what the British would call it, to India. And this is an important story. Now, I referenced to you and mentioned to you a few moments ago about a story recent appearing noting how George Orwell's book, Big Brother, has been rewritten from an Indian publisher, and the fact that many of the items in the book were in error or the spelling was incorrect. And under the title, Paging Big Brother in Amazon's Bookstore, Orwell gets a rewrite. It noted here the role of India and how some of these producers, here's an example of one I'm going to read from this article. Counterfeits and imports are generally the least expensive editions. Who can blame people for buying those? So they do. At $7.99, legitimate editions of 1984 was recently ranked as number 72 among all Amazon books. A $5 Indian import was ranked number 970, which suggested copies were selling at a steady clip. And in that copy, there were numerous distortions and errors. This is a major concern. We've chatted about this humorously in the past, but this is significant. We see the potential of rewriting history.
Well, not only it's a major concern, and this is one of the problems with social media. It's one of the problems with globalism, and I am a globalist, but I recognize there are problems, and that you can order over the internet a book from India or China, which has completely false information in it. And there's nothing that, say, American or British or French authorities can do about it, because the book is simply stuck in the post and it arrives on your doorstep.
Or it's sent
and they have no control over the copyright laws in the country that where it was printed.
Or it's sent to you electronically to your Kindle or some other device.
Yes.
I say it is a little humorous, but at the same time, Tom, both you and I think I'm speaking for you, but I think this is a very serious concern, one that, quite frankly, we should all be focusing on.
No, I couldn't agree with you more.
Thank you.
Wait a minute, Lockwood, we agree.
No, you agree.
That's humorous.
This is a red letter day here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, as always, a pleasure talking with you.
Always a pleasure to talk with you, Lockwood. Hello to all the listeners.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms here on the talk station, FM 107, AM 1240.
Head Radio is a production of the Talk Station.